Welcome to Dynasty Life. I am Theo Greminger. Redraft ends, but Dynasty is life. And I'm really excited today to be joined by Sean Siegel. A few weeks back, I had Curtis Patrick of RotoViz, who knocked it out of the park. And I have no doubt that Sean Siegel today is going to knock it out of the park as well. Sean, you were on press coverage with me this summer, but first time in the Dynasty Life chair. Welcome. We're one at the time of recording this, we are 1 week away from the NFL draft. It's a very, very exciting times for us.
It is. And I enjoy doing the press coverage. I'm excited for this. The Dynasty is maybe my favorite. Certainly is something that RotoViz takes great pride in. Let's try and one up Curtis, right?
100%. You have to one up Curtis in every single way in this. But you know, let's kind of dive into it. What do you guys have going on right now at RotoViz, sort of your process, your build up for the NFL draft?
Yeah, we have the RotoViz rookie guide, and it's in, I think it's seventh year. People, you know, enjoy it. And we got a lot of feedback that this year was the best. And so I'm fired up about that. We've got a lot of amazing information from the tools, Dave Caban, Blair Andrews, but then a lot of great stuff from Sports Info Solutions College Database, which is absolutely fantastic. So you can find all of that stuff. Volume 3 will be out immediately following the NFL draft. So you'll get the mocks, the updated rankings, all of those. And we do have a few controversial and sort of fun special RotoViz ranks in there every year. So that part of it, I'm fired out about, obviously. And then I've got a series that'll come out over the next week where I make the case for each of the top six players as the rookie 101. And it's a serious series. I think all six guys are actually in the mix or should be in the mix. Obviously, they won't actually go that way. And then we'll have draft content. We'll have post-draft content. The rookie drafts that start immediately following the NFL draft. I mean, Theo, that's the best time of the year, isn't it?
It's, you nailed it. And it's so funny because when we have this buildup for the NFL draft, content creators are spending months and months and months on this individual draft class. And then we have a five-day period, some leagues less than that, where you have let's call it a 5 or 6 day period where you have all this new information with landing spots, roles that you have to factor into your rookie draft decision. So it's really sort of a cruel process in Dynasty one of the most important days of the entire year, if not the most important for Dynasty managers, the rookie draft. You really only have this short period of time between the NFL draft and rookie drafts, but that's what makes it so fun. It's being able to kind of change on the fly, but let's stick with that because landing spot matters, but can landing spot also get Dynasty managers into trouble where they completely might overweigh a situation versus a prospect profile? Sort of like everything changes so quickly. I'll bring up Trey Sermon. Years ago, Trey Sermon, we saw how high he steamed up in rookie drafts. And I think it's sort of a cautionary tale. Sky Moore, a little bit of a cautionary tale. Certainly worked out with Rashi Rice, though, on the field with the KC landing spot. But you see these sort of horror stories. Take that any way you want. How much will landing spot affect when you redo your rankings over at RotoViz?
It definitely will. And yet, I would probably describe, certainly myself, and probably our approach as a site as being, you know, toward the outer edge in saying that talent is very real and that it's going to trump the situation in many ways. Now, I'm not going to completely eliminate the fact that if you have Arthur Smith as your coach, you're going to have to factor some of the elements in there, right? Landing spot does matter. Situation matters. Obviously, the reason that people are spend so much time on projections, and projections are very meaningful in terms of how we have ADP and all of those types of things, is because the team situation will make a big difference. And yet, especially if you're looking at it from a dynasty perspective, I mean, you want to be going after the guys who are actually good. And one of the names that just jumps out to me in thinking through that topic is an AJ Brown, where he was pushed down immediately after being drafted because it wasn't a great situation. And I think that was true. It didn't turn out to be a great situation necessarily. And yet our ranking on him was based on the fact that we thought that dude was unreal. And that has played out. Now, you're not always right, but what AJ Brown had done and what he projected to do was so extreme that you want to be very cautious before you elevate, you know, much lesser prospects ahead of a player with that level of talent.
Yeah, and I love the example you bring up, and I'll also bring up the kind of the mistake that I see a lot of dynasty managers make is the ability for an elite player to overcome situations which look like they're going to keep their volume down or their targets down. We've seen time and time again a player kind of step into a situation and the dynasty marketplace will kind of bring up their target competition. And when it's an elite player, it really doesn't matter. I'll bring up sort of the CeeDee Lamb landing spot. When he landed, we had Amari Cooper and Michael Gallup who were sort of insulated in their redraft value. And Amari Cooper at the time certainly had a lot of dynasty value. And some people didn't love that landing spot. And it took CeeDee Lamb, you know, till year three to really, really blow up. But year two, you started seeing, you know, huge return on investment. I think that that Chicago landing spot at nine, let's say you have a Malik Nabers or you have a Roma Dunze land at nine. Would that be a situation where you're going to see some dynasty managers making another mistake of crowded situation now, but talent sort of always rises to the top?
You have a variety of different areas of uncertainty there, because I certainly believe that Caleb Williams is going to be a superstar, but we do know that players who are drafted even very early miss there. You could go through this time period where the quarterback situation is not as good as people think. I'm a little bit nervous about just Chicago itself as an environment in which maybe you can support this extremely high-powered passing offense. And certainly, you wouldn't really want to be there with a DJ Moore, and a Keenan Allen is likely to really suppress the volume you can get as a rookie. Now, I'm not saying that we should overreact, but we do want to be aware of like when the best price is going to be too, because what a player does as a rookie dramatically impacts where they are going forward almost forever, unless they have a completely, you know, game-changing type of year, which we do have sometimes. And one of the things we saw with CeeDee Lamb, and this is one of the things that I pointed out last year for JSN that turned out to not really work out in the way that I had hoped. But even in that rookie season, over the second half of the year, CeeDee Lamb outscored Amari Cooper by like 0.1, right? It was basically a dead heat. But even as a rookie, he's right there. And so that's very possible. I think you do want to bet on the best guy. Certainly the things that we saw from Amari Cooper at the end of his career in Dallas, you wouldn't necessarily have expected him to go to Cleveland and actually be pretty good. But when you're looking at someone like a JSN now, and he's going to be my answer to another one of your questions probably, but it does create potentially a problem if you have some other things there. So you had a quarterback problem as well for the Seahawks, and now his situation has changed. So even as we're saying, you know, be very aware of the talent, the situation is going to matter, but you can also be wrong on the talent. Maybe I was wrong on JSN and how good he is. So one of the things that makes it so fun is that there are so many variables in play as we're trying to figure out these values.
No, for sure. And we're going to dive into Sean's sort of valuation for our rookie picks, and not only the players Sean would select with these rookie selections before the NFL draft, but we're going to dive into trades we would make, the actual trades for veteran NFL players that we would make for our rookie picks, which some dynasty managers do it differently. And this is certainly a class that has had a ton of hype, and those picks are worth a ton. We're going to kind of put Sean on the spot and see, you know, where he would be at for his breaking point for getting off of some of these rookie picks. But first, I've got to ask you sort of my evergreen question that I'm asking everyone right here on Dynasty Life. Which player, if you could know anyone's final stats in 2024, which player would you choose?
I'm talking about the veteran players now?
Or rookie. Take it either way you want. I think we'll cover both.
Well, I just mentioned Jaxon Smith-Njigba, and he would probably be the guy. And you can look at that. If I answer Sam Howell, people will be like, well, the answer is like 0 points. And so we can answer that question for you very easily. But I do think there are a lot of scenarios we could get from Seattle. And I still think that JSN is the best guy there. I think he's going to have a fantastic career. And when you look at DK Metcalf, they're very different players. So I don't think they necessarily cause a problem for each other. But especially when you have Tyler Lockett there as well, and you're going to have poor quarterback play from Geno Smith, and maybe you have a run-first offense. For me, knowing the young guy, knowing JSN, would completely change for you, or it would cement for you how you wanted to play all of that. And JSN is such an interesting player because he is a phenomenal talent. One of the things that, again, it's not apples and oranges because stylistically they're very, very different, but he had a much better sophomore season with CJ Stroud than Marvin Harrison did, right? And so because they're different stylistically, we're willing to say Marvin Harrison is a generational prospect, and we're willing to say that JSN may be nothing more than a guy who runs some routes underneath. But even that completely misrepresents what he did at Ohio State when he's in that same offense with Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave. And so you look forward to 2024 and you try and figure out what the Seahawks are going to be. It has so many ramifications, you know, even down to what their running backs do. It would be great to know that because, I mean, unless I'm completely and totally wrong on JSN as a talent, then his prices are massively exploitable right now, but they also have these shockwaves for a lot of other guys.
I love it. And Seattle's certainly an offense that I think we could see take that next step forward. I thought it was a very inspired hire to hire Ryan Grubb, a guy that we've seen with such success at Washington, such success at Fresno State, and sort of a guy that hasn't been through the ringer, somebody with sort of fresh ideas coming in. We love to see that. So in the spirit of the show here, let's say you have the 110 right now in a super flex, wide receiver heavy, tight end premium format like the FFPC Triflex, or certainly a lot of dynasty leagues I'm sure you play in, Sean. 110 or Jaxon Smith-Njigba, who a year ago you and Player Profiler, RotoViz, everybody had him as the wide receiver one in the 2023 class.
So I have him currently as wide receiver 24 and sort of nestled in there in between Jaden Reed and Tank Dell, two guys who are not nearly as good of prospects, but did what you needed to do as rookies to make that big jump. And then the next guy I would have after that is Xavier Worthy, which is interesting because the actual projected picks in that kind of 110 range, I have about a half round lower, which would be McCarthy, Thomas, you know, perhaps Mitchell, those types of players. So I think that even though what we do have now is a disappointing rookie season that does change how we view him, and it changes the prices you're going to get going forward. And the situation hasn't necessarily gotten better, which is, you know, why I would love to know his stats. I still think that the foundation there is so strong that to pick these other guys ahead of him, that's not where I am right now. Now, if I'm trying to acquire him in a trade, I'm going to start out with some packages or a mix of approaches to try and get him for less than that, because I do think that he's someone that at this point, I mean, if you're trying to acquire more than you already have, you're probably trying to buy low.
Yeah, that I think you nailed that one. And how about for the 2024 rookie class specifically? You guys put, and I gave Curtis this compliment. I said, we put out a rookie guide at Player Profiler, which I think is fantastic, but I also get the RotoViz rookie guide. I said, if you want to purchase two rookie guides, like a lot of people do, I will co-sign Curtis, and you guys doing a fantastic job. But you guys put months and months into it, as do we. You've evaluated this class at length. Which player do you sit back and say, gosh, I wish I knew their final stats for 2024?
So in some ways, this is almost a cop-out, but for me, it would be Jaden Daniels, because the main thing I want to know is if he got through, you know, 16, 17 games. The concern that it seems that everyone has is the hits that he takes. And, you know, you go back and forth, you do get some good information from, you know, a variety of sources pointing out that a scrambling quarterback in many ways is not necessarily more likely to miss time than a pocket passer. Certainly not necessarily more likely to miss time than a pocket passer who isn't good at avoiding contact, right? You know, taking those hits that you don't see in the pocket lead to a lot of injuries as well. But when you think about the time that's been missed by a Kyler Murray, the time that's been missed by a Lamar Jackson, the ways that, you know, even someone like a Trey Lance has had his, you know, career basically ruined. You think about losing the rookie season from Anthony Richardson. If we could just know that we were going to get through the year with Jaden Daniels, that would be everything you needed to draft him in basically every single draft, because this is a guy who comes in with a lot more risk than a player like Caleb Williams. At the same time, he's basically a combination of Joe Burrow and Lamar Jackson. And from that perspective, it'd be very easy to take him at the 101 in rookie drafts, and also in any type of redraft contest, you'd be talking about him as undervalued by four or five rounds, Right? I mean, this is someone who could finish as the overall QB1 in 2024. And what we basically need to know is that he's not going to get annihilated in week two, week three, and you're going to take close to a zero.
And I think you nailed it. I think that's not only a dynasty response, but he could really break like underdog FFPC, any of these big best ball tournaments, when you're able to get him sort of at that mid QB2 price, if he rushes for 1,000 yards and puts up any kind of touchdown pass numbers, you know, he could put up, you know, like you said, a top five quarterback season at the top. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to dive into a number of dynasty concepts, as well as take a dive into this rookie class with Sean Siegel. Be right back.
This episode brought to you by Underdog Fantasy. Underdog Fantasy has been sponsoring Player Profiler and everything we're doing here since 2020. Sign up. Use promo code UNDERWORLD for a 100% instant deposit match up to $100. 100% instant deposit match up to $100. And you're like, oh, well, you know, everyone's on Underdog. Not true. There's plenty of people in this audience that have not yet tried out Underdog, and it's time. They're adding more sports. They're adding more contests. Like when we're heading into NFL draft season, there's the rookies and sophomores game. When you think about way too early fantasy football, that's what Underdog is. When you think about best ball, that's what Underdog is. And if you can pick players at the end of an Underdog fantasy best ball draft that are under rostered, that few people are picking at all, and that guy, like Kyren Williams, hits, you will likely experience positive returns. All you need is that one guy at the end who no one else is rostering, and the way to find that guy is to listen to us. UnderdogFantasy.com. The promo code is UNDERWORLD. 100% deposit match up to $100 with promo code UNDERWORLD. Underdog makes everything we do possible.
Welcome back to Dynasty Life. Theo Greminger with Sean Siegel of RotoViz. And Sean, one other sort of evergreen question that I've been asking all of my guests, and I've had a really good run here at Dynasty Life with some really, really thoughtful responses here, is we've seen rookie wide receivers make exceptional impacts in year one. We've seen three out of the last four seasons with a rookie finishing top six in PPR scoring at the wide receiver position. We saw it with Justin Jefferson. We saw it with Ja'Marr Chase. Then we saw it with Puka Nacua. Then last year, we had sort of a glass ceiling was shattered for us in fantasy. We saw a tight end finish as tight end one overall as a rookie in Sam Laporta. I believe that we will see a wide receiver that's a rookie finish number one at their position sometime in the near future. If it was to happen this year, which of the big three wide receivers would it be? And in which particular situation?
Well, I think you're looking at Malik Nabers as the guy. Somebody who dominates in all areas, is fantastic with the ball in his hand, and is this elite athlete. Now, where you would get that, I mean, it's probably going to be the Chargers, right? And the issue that you have there is that maybe the overall number of passing plays isn't that high, and yet that's the situation where a rookie could go in. And I mean, we're talking about market shares that are absolutely insane. You would expect the guy, if it is one of these, you know, top three, to actually go over a 30%, you know, target market share, but it could even get, I mean, you could get 32, 33, 34, I mean, 35% because of who you're competing with there. And so even if the Chargers are a run-based team, which is everything that they're telling us that they will be, that guy is going to get so much of the volume when you think about who else is on that roster. And then it could be pretty efficient, right? If Harbaugh does what he wants, the team is a solid team in 2024 before maybe they make a jump in 2025, but you also have Justin Herbert there, then the value of the targets that you're getting are going to be a lot higher than, you know, probably the value of the targets you get from a Kyler Murray, probably the quality of the targets that you get from a Daniel Jones. Now, I don't think we can eliminate those other spots. Those actually work for me pretty well too. But even with the Arizona Cardinals, for example, I mean, you're competing with Trey McBride, who has every chance to be the overall tight end one this season. You just really don't have that with the Chargers.
I think you nailed it. And I think Malik Nabers is an interesting one. I went with Marvin Harrison Jr. on the Chargers, but Malik Nabers, with his explosiveness, could sort of do with 140 targets what a lot of players could do with 155, 160 targets. His big playability, I think, would shine. You know, and you think about the Greg Roman offense at its peak in 2019, you had a couple of games where it was like Hollywood Brown just going nuts and finding the end zone on, you know, big plays. Like, Nabers has that in his wheelhouse as well. So very interesting. Let's talk about that, though, because I know you and Curtis and everybody at RotoViz have extreme enthusiasm for Malik Nabers. And Malik Nabers, we did cumulative rankings for our rookie guide. I had Marvin Harrison Jr. at wide receiver one and Nabers at two. And then that was sort of my single QB rankings. But we had also Jax Falcone. We had John Lobb, Cody Carpentier, and Matty Kiwum. And because we had sort of the all five of us ranking, Malik Nabers came out on top as wide receiver one in the guide. But I think that there's a disconnect between the 101 in single QB leagues. I think it's sort of set in stone with Marvin Harrison Jr. Let's say you have the 101 in like an FFPC single QB league. How much is it going to take to get you off of that 101 for the 102? And in the back of your mind, you're perfectly comfortable taking Malik Nabers sort of with an exceptional outcome. But what is the game theory of this? What would be an appropriate offer to kind of accept if we're talking rookie picks?
Yeah, one of the great things for this season is that you can almost move down regardless of what your need is. So Blair Andrews and I have a league where we have the 101 because we were able to win the backdraw in the RB Triflex format, the FFPC. It's one of the great things I love about it is you have to actually win the backdraw as opposed to just, you know, score 0 points on the season. And that team is ready to go now and win the title this year if we don't miss on that pick. But one of the things that we do need is a quarterback, right? So you can sit there and you can take Caleb Williams, or you can move down and make the play that I just discussed with a Jaden Daniels. I think that if you can, I think you should go ahead and ask for the world, because with Caleb Williams, you're probably talking about 15 years of above average production. If you're thinking more like what I want to do in the next three or four, I think getting down to Jaden Daniels might even work in your favor, right? And people are going to still be willing to pay, and not in every league and not every manager, but enough people will, that you should be trying to move when it makes sense and kind of stay when it makes sense and balance those things out. But because you can move down from Caleb Williams to Jaden Daniels, it makes sense to do that. But also because you can move down from Marvin Harrison to Malik Nabers, it makes sense to do that. And I have Nabers and Daniels as the higher scoring players for 2024 at their positions. I have Nabers straight up ranked higher. And so from that perspective, I think if you can get down, you probably want to do it. But then the other thing is Brock Bowers is a better prospect than all of those guys. And so if you understand the necessity for tight ends or the value for tight ends, especially in tight end premium, then, I mean, it's not even, you know, three guys or four guys or five guys. And for people who like Drake May, you're talking about six. So it depends on how many additional things you need and where that last piece is for you. But moving down is always fun. I think even with Caleb Williams there at the top, you want to think about it.
Okay, we'll come back to the tight ends, because I want to talk about Brock Bowers at length. Because I'm getting made fun of even with how excited I am about Brock Bowers at this point. There's very few assets I have in my dynasty rosters that I'm not willing to give up for the chance to get Brock Bowers on all my teams. But let's talk a little bit more about that 101, the ability to trade down and the value of Caleb Williams. Talk about a guy like Joe Burrow. Is there a scenario in dynasty? And I think one thing that you do very well, Sean, is you kind of you have a little bit of a situation-averse approach to Dynasty where you're trying to always accumulate picks and always sort of get your roster better and not sit still. I think that that's – we should be a little bit more like that. But potentially pivoting from a Joe Burrow to a Caleb Williams, that's out there in pretty much every league right now. When you look at raw rankings on most sites, they're going to have Joe Burrow ahead of Caleb Williams. You gain a guy who hasn't been injured in Caleb Williams. You gain a very good situation, and you also gain sort of an unknown ceiling that we haven't really seen from Burrow. Are you willing to make that pivot where you trade Joe Burrow to get the 101, sort of a reverse of the show topic.
Yeah, I have the top three guys ranked ahead of Burrow. And so Burrow is just ahead of Marvin Harrison for me. But Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, both better. Caleb Williams, because you have this sort of unreal full ceiling, and you have a player where you get those young years. One of the things that we kind of forget about for players like quarterbacks who could play to their 40 is that you still benefit from gaining the early 20s time period if you can get that. And so that's a valuable thing to get back. Daniels just has more ceiling because of the rushing value. And with Burrow, we do have some questions about the injuries that he suffered. You have the question about, like, how good is the wide receiver two going to eventually be once T. Higgins does depart, which isn't going to happen this year, it doesn't look like, but will eventually. And you know, one of the things that is kind of striking to me is that you have this coaching staff enthusiasm for it after Jake Browning performs well at the end. It's like, well, what about the first month of the year every year where the Bengals look like they haven't practiced? You know, I don't want to go out the first month and lose all my dynasty leagues because Joe Burrow is taking all these sacks that the Bengals haven't successfully prepared for, right? So you can easily lose that. One of the things that is tough in dynasty, in these rookie drafts, is to properly calibrate and not simply take all of these rookies as though the hit that you're hoping for has already happened. We tend to not factor in the missed potential nearly as well as we should. And yet I think a lot of times people who are able to do that better then underrate the rookies, because this element where you're going to get more ceiling from the rookie and you're going to get more youth from the rookie, and you also have the ability to get out of the rookie after the first year, even if they do miss, that those things taken in concert make the young player worth more than the veteran, even if the veteran doesn't have that sort of talent base miss in his range of outcomes in the same way, but they still have all of that injury risk, right? And so a lot of the things we're concerned about for rookies actually do apply to the veterans as well.
I think that's a really interesting concept in Dynasty. It's sort of value insulation matters, and also the ability to take on an injury, what will that would do to your Dynasty value. If it's a player who's taking on like his third injury in the NFL, you're basically done in Dynasty. A guy like Caleb, if he gets injured in the preseason, misses the year, he's still worth more than any quarterback in the 2025 class, unless there's some sort of a massive breakthrough in value. There's not a guy in next year's class that's going to take over there. So very, very interesting one. Let's bounce back to the tight end position. First, sort of a bird's eye view. We talked about Sam Laporta. Then you factor in Trey McBride, who you mentioned, Evan Engram, Brock Bowers, Dalton Kincaid. Are we sort of seeing a changing of the guard in fantasy with these sort of sub 250 pound guys who are 6'3" or 6'4"? We had all these years of the Jimmy Grahams, the Rob Gronkowskis, Travis Kelce to an extent, of these larger tight ends. Kelce slimmed down certainly in his later career. He'd probably fall into line with a true weight that was in line with these guys. But is this sort of a trend that you're seeing, these smaller move tight ends as huge dynasty pieces for us and players that the NFL is also starting to value at a very high level?
I think that that's probably the case. I do think at tight end, you know, we want to make sure that we're looking at what the individual team wants from that guy and then whether or not he'll be able to pull it off. And one of the things you saw instantly last year with Laporta was that the buzz that he started to get pre-draft, when people saw how athletic he was, you go back and you look at the results and you're like, well, this combination of results and athleticism could, you know, really be something. And then the Lions take him a little bit earlier in the draft maybe than people expected. And then instantly when they start practicing, they're like, oh, this dude is amazing, right? Well, at that point, I think you want to make sure that you are in. And you don't always get that instantly. I mean, Trey McBride and how it appeared the Cardinals were like on the verge of not making him into what he is, which is an absolute force. You know, that part can be frustrating. But even with that, we want to be on these guys early. And so regardless of the actual build, I think that you want to be ahead as opposed to trailing on it. Because I have Sam Laporta and Trey McBride in virtually every league that I participate in, and they're the guys that I get trade offers on, right? Just every day in your inbox, you have a trade offer for those players, which, you know, maybe you're not going to accept most of those trades, but this idea that the tight ends aren't valuable is certainly not the case. And there's also this element of like when they're going to produce. You mentioned how the young wide receivers have been scoring so well recently, but Laporta with his season last year, and then, you know, we tend to forget because the last couple of years have been so frustrating, but Kyle Pitts with the 1,000-yard rookie season recently as well shows you that the rookies at the tight end position are also ready to make contributions that wasn't the case in the past. And so you have to be on them. You have to be on a Brock Bowers. I think to the size question, it is interesting because you are going to be enthusiastic for some of the particular players, but maybe also terrified of what the team will actually do with them. So you've got to then make sure you continue your research. Ben Sinnott is somebody who, you know, probably is massively undervalued, but it's not just him. If Jaheim Bell ends up being a tight end who's used as a, you know, real NFL player as opposed to an H-back, then he's somebody who's vastly undervalued because, I mean, his yard per route numbers and his athleticism suggest a player who should be getting drafted all the time right now and is going to go early in this draft. But that's not what you tend to hear from the people who are more dialed into the draft process or the college game process, where they're saying this guy is going to fall. He's not going to be a real tight end. And so if that's the case, I mean, we want to be aware of that. But I mean, if I get a signal that he's going to be a real tight end, then I'm back on board 100% with him.
Yeah, and if you want to hear about Jaheim Bell at length, Scott Barrett was on a recent Dynasty Life, and he's all in on Jaheim Bell. But let's talk about Brock Bowers. You bring up Kyle Pitts. Is Kyle Pitts, with his sort of past 2 year struggles, he had the fantastic rookie season, but the last 2 years, if you drafted him in redraft or if you had him in Dynasty, it's been a lot of pain. Do you think that his struggles are affecting the marketplace for a player like Brock Bowers?
I don't necessarily think so, because you can see what Laporta and McBride do so clearly. And even though it's not to the same extent, I think people who were on Kincaid last year did get just enough in the redraft environment to make that a decent pick. Certainly, I think he's undervalued for 2024 and it's going to pay off in a big way there. He's somebody I think everybody should be on. But the other element with Bowers is simply that he's a better prospect by, you know, a country mile than any of those guys. And that doesn't mean that he'll hit the way that they hit, because when you're talking about Pitts, I mean, with Pitts, the rookie season is, you know, like a 95th percentile outcome. And then the next two seasons are like 5 percentile outcomes. And so you've gotten very weird results from Pitts that wouldn't, I mean, in any of the cases, wouldn't be what you would expect. For Laporta, you get a great outcome. For McBride, you get that second year eruption. I mean, for Bowers, if we get a below average outcome, he's only going to be fine. And people are going to say, look, I mean, you can get other tight ends. You don't want to break the bank there when you're talking about a Harrison or a Neighbors. But if we get the kind of out, I mean, if you get Brock Bowers at his prospect level and then you get an above average outcome for what that prospect level is, I mean, you're talking about somebody who just so completely eviscerates the tight end position that, I mean, he'll be the most valuable player in all of fantasy.
Jordy Nelson, but he plays tight end. Is that a fair upside?
I mean, he's going to score so many points.
Okay, so he's going to score so many points. Let's say you're in a FFPC or tight end premium super flex rookie draft. Let's say Jaden Daniels, let's say Caleb Williams, Malik Nabers, and Marvin Harrison Jr. are off the board. Let's say it's the 105. Let's say Brock Bowers lands very well in the NFL draft. Let's say he's a pick. Well, give us your dream scenario for Bowers' landing spot, Sean.
You know, for the tight ends, it's a little bit different. He obviously is connected to the Jets. And if you have Garrett Wilson and Bowers together and you do actually get a season from Aaron Rodgers, I think that would work out perfectly. You know, Rodgers is going to be hard to get along with, even for somebody of that caliber. So maybe there are some personality things there. But if you can end up as the number two in a situation where there's nothing else, so you aren't going to be dealing with, I mean, there are situations he could go to where he's the guy who's double and triple teamed all season. He's that good, right? But if you get the situation there with the Jets, I think that, you know, 1,000-yard season with 12 touchdowns, yeah, that's still going to be an above-average outcome, but it's a very realistic outcome. And again, that just smashes all of your formats.
So let's say in this scenario, Brock Bowers is a New York Jet. I agree with you. That'd be a great landing spot. If Robert Tonyan can score a bunch of touchdowns with Aaron Rodgers as an unknown, I'm pretty sure Brock Bowers can too. I agree with you on that one. So let's say the two quarterbacks are gone. Let's say the two wide receivers are gone. Let's say Drake May's a New England Patriot. You're not crazy about it. Let's say Brock Bowers is right there for you at the 105, and you send a trade offer, and that manager says, if we're doing this offer, I want Trey McBride. Are you willing to pivot from Trey McBride to Brock Bowers, or you want a little bit more on top of the 105 for Trey McBride? I think it's a reasonable pivot, even though Trey McBride might burn you this year. You have to like the profile and the chance for a 3-year window to really win that deal. Are you making that deal?
I have them back to back in the second round, ahead of Anthony Richardson, ahead of Lamar Jackson. I mean, that's how high I am on both guys. I do have Bowers the one spot higher. I think it would be difficult because McBride is going to score so many points this season. And I think that one of the reasons you get offers on him every day is that people still don't quite realize what he did and maybe didn't watch the Arizona Cardinals play. If you've watched McBride, then you're going to be even higher than you are if you're just looking at his points. I mean, this guy is an unstoppable force who's a freak athlete, right? So it's not just that he's someone with tight end production. I mean, you can't stop Trey McBride. And if they bring in that receiver to where, you know, you're not going to be able to get that defensive attention. So even though I have Brock Bowers barely higher, I mean, probably not, but yeah, that's where those guys should go. They should go ahead of some of even the elite quarterbacks. And again, that's in Superflex.
Very, very high praise. And certainly I think Trey McBride. So Trey McBride, let's say the 108, the 107, the 106 in a tight end premium Superflex, you're comfortable trading all of those picks to get Trey McBride.
I am. I have May and Odunze in the next sort of tier down. And if you need it, I mean, the thing that you're dealing with there with the Superflex is simply that on a lot of teams, quarterback is going to be very difficult to address. So I have no problem with taking May if that's what you have to do, because you're kind of locked out. And in many leagues, listeners will know that if you get yourself in a QB issue, or you have a QB problem, everyone else in the league is going to make you pay even way above the already high market prices to get yourself out of it. And so if you're sitting there in a rookie draft, you're going to sometimes have to do it, even if that's not what your rankings say. Outside of that, I prefer the tight end.
Yeah, and again, these are kind of micro moves because you tier these guys in terms of value as well. But one guy that I think is very interesting is Puka Nacua. Puka Nacua, we have him very highly ranked at Player Profiler. You certainly do at RotoViz, and he's earned it. An incredible season last year. No reason to think that it slows down. The only knock I would put on Nacua is he's a player that needs a ton of targets. This is not a guy that could, if we said we're chopping off 15% of his targets, I don't necessarily think he's going to score at that sort of level. But other than that, everything about him is pretty clean. And a lot of the times we see these day three guys hit in the way he hit. You're talking about Tyreek Hill. You're talking about Amon-Ra St. Brown. You're talking about Stephon Diggs. If you overcome your draft capital with that sort of production, it usually sticks around. But let's put you on the clock here. Let's say you have Puka Nacua. You're willing to trade Puka Nacua, I'm guessing, for Neighbors and Marvin Harrison Jr., correct?
I have Puka above Harrison.
Okay.
They're all in that same basic range. One of the things that you need is there's going to be an issue that you run into with Nacua where any down stretch is going to hurt his trade value, where I don't think that that's necessarily the case for Harrison, who could have a bad rookie year and you're going to be able to get basically the same back for him. The thing that you need would be for Nacua to do the same thing as basically Amon-Ra, where he backs it up for another year. Then I think you're into the mix where a downstretch doesn't really hurt him. Certainly with Tyreek Hill, you've got tons and tons of seasons. A downstretch isn't going to hurt him there. I mean, the thing with Nacua is that he's a little bit better with the ball in his hands, and he's a little bit better on deeper targets than I think I had necessarily realized. There is the potential additional issue there, and that'll be interesting to see with Harrison what the landing spot is. I mean, Matthew Stafford is probably not going to be the quarterback for a decent chunk of Nacua's career. And so if you're looking ahead to that point, I could certainly understand wanting Harrison instead.
So your comfort level right now, I do think that the pivot is there for a lot of managers with Nacua. There's been, whether this offseason, someone's got an opinion on Nacua. A lot of people will say that's a sort of a chance to tear up, put Nacua in a package to get, you know, a Ja'Marr Chase, a Justin Jefferson. He's sort of that level of player that a 2-for-1 or him in a pick, you can tear up. And then there's some people saying that there's an opportunity to kind of trade Nacua at cost because this could be his dynasty peak. You have him very highly ranked. Are you willing to trade the 104 right now in a super flex to trade straight up for Puka Nacua?
I wouldn't. I mean, the rankings suggest that, but I'm going to stick with the young guys.
Okay.
So now, I mean, he's super young himself, but I think, again, you have this, the uncertainty of the even more massive talent, I think, is going to trump even what he did. Now, the thing that I think benefits him is that you're probably, I mean, Cooper Kupp is probably no longer going to put up the gigantic seasons from the past and yet be able to be enough of a compliment to help him. So it's probably only a positive, but we can't even be completely sure that Kupp wouldn't come back and flip for decent stretches in 2024 and be the guy there, in which case, again, that's going to hurt the Nacua trade value very, very significantly. I just don't think there's anything that's going to hurt the trade value of Harrison Bowers in the very near future. May is probably in a little bit different case there, and why you should probably have him in the 5-6 range, even if you're a fan. And there are some, you know, big reasons to think that Drake May could be the number one guy from this class as well.
So let's stick with that. Drake May, you know, I thought there was Sigmund Bloom. I had him on another pod, but an interesting take he had is in previous seasons, Drake May has done enough in his career at UNC that he would be treated as the 101 in the NFL draft. There's previous drafts where he would be, a lot of previous drafts where he'd be the QB1 in the draft class and the 101 in the NFL draft. The fact that Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels have so much fantasy potential, it's almost sort of created a value for Drake May. Maybe your thoughts on Drake May and his potential as a pro.
The upside is massive. And yet, I think that there are a lot of concerns that we're willing to ignore because he's young, right? And so we're basically putting Williams and May and McCarthy in one group and evaluating them, and then putting Daniels and Nix and Penix in another group and evaluating them. And there are reasons why that might not be the best way to do it. But certainly for me, when I dive into the numbers at SIS, the willingness of May to attack deep is going to be very valuable for a team. But the accuracy numbers on those passes, according to the SIS charting, is actually poor. And so if the thing that is the strength of this player is kind of a misunderstood or an exaggerated strength, I have some concerns with that. And then the other thing is, I don't think that he's going to run as much as people would like. Is there going to be a decent floor? And is he going to add a decent number of points every game to keep you in that tier where it's a very clear and true QB1? Then I think that the answer, if he hits, he still actually succeed as an NFL starter to do this for you over an 8-9 year period of time. But the things that I've looked at with his rushing numbers as well suggest to me that he's going to slide in as that, you know, back half of QB1. So a QB7 to QB12, which, again, when we're talking about, you know, what he's done, what the upside is, how we want to, you know, consider what's really pretty significant bust potential, I guess the upside for me is probably not there. And then you have the additional risk of him going to a team that is pretty tragic. And that would take out some of the rookie production that you do need, because he's going to be valued based on what he does as a rookie, similar to what we see with Bryce Young, right? So if you get in a bad enough situation as the QB, you can just lose everything. I don't think that that's probably true for the first two picks. And it's probably not going to be true for the Vikings pick. It's probably not going to be true for the Broncos pick. When you're looking at the Patriots or you're looking at the Raiders, you're looking at least a slight possibility the Titans would do something. I mean, maybe you lose it all just because your first year, the circumstances are so poor.
So let's say that there is a kind of the circumstance is poor. Let's say he's a New England Patriot at 3 overall and people don't love the landing spot. And let's say the wide receivers land well, and let's say it's the 107 and you have Brock Bowers gone, the wide receiver's gone, Jaden Daniels gone, certainly Caleb Williams gone, and 107 is sitting there and it's Drake May on the clock. Who are some quarterbacks you think that you would be willing to take in that trade situation? I'll throw out sort of a couple guys I think that would be in that wheelhouse. Brock Purdy, who sort of has the opposite end of draft capital, but the situation would be completely reversed. Are you accepting a Brock Purdy straight up for the 107 with Drake May on the clock, assuming that the landing spot is not ideal?
I think that you probably should. I personally would not. And so that may be a weird way to answer it, but I do have May about a round ahead of Purdy. And he's someone where I don't think the circumstances are ever going to insulate him from a down stretch. Whereas the physical talent of a Drake May creates more of that insulation and will do even with the Patriots, right? For me, I have May in the same kind of, in a 5-pick stretch, I've got Richardson, Jackson, May, and Kyler Murray. I think Kyler Murray is the one who's probably the most interesting, where there are going to be some people who have him who are not happy that they still have him. And maybe that's a move that you can make. But Kyler Murray has, you know, plenty of red flags as well. There should be enthusiasm once they get their receiver.
Okay, so let's take a landing spot averse look at Rome Odunze. Rome Odunze, well, actually, we can't really do landing spot averse because we're talking rookie draft picks. Let's say Rome Odunze lands well. Let's say Rome Odunze certainly, or let's say a medium landing spot. Let's say he lands at 6 overall to the New York Giants. So the target volume should be there. The role should be there. Quarterback situation poor and team offense not great. Are you willing to trade that pick while you're OTC, let's say your wide receiver needy, for Drake London?
I think you have to have London higher at this point, even though there is a situation right now where I think we're under the assumption that Arthur Smith was so bad that we can't count anything that team did. And the fact of the matter is still that Drake London was not that great, right? But I do think the situation flips so completely now with where they are for 2024 that London probably won't even have to be that good to be a dynamic force in fantasy with at the very least a high floor, which with a rookie like Odunze, you're not necessarily going to get. So you're talking about, like, when's the production going to come and what is that going to mean? Odunze is a complicated sort of evaluation because a lot of people will point to the first several years and even that third year where, you know, on some per play types of evaluations, he doesn't necessarily have the production that you want to see. And you have some very athletic first round picks who met that same sort of production profile where they busted. But when we take a broader view, there are plenty of later picks who with that production profile have been awesome. And then you go and you dive into it. You've got some of the stuff with the pandemic still affecting the guys in this class. You have an element with Odunze where he's good at all levels. He's good with the ball in his hands. One of the things that SIS would suggest is that Penix is vastly overrated and was probably hurting his receivers in some way, shape, or form. Now, his ability and willingness to throw deep was going to help them at times. And yet it's probably the coaching staff that was more of a value there than it was the QB. You put all of those things together and then you see how athletic he actually is and a variety of athletic strengths. You know, we are kind of back to that point where I think almost everyone is pretty comfortable with him. I mean, he's going to be interesting, right? I do think that when you're talking about him, you're looking at guys like Waddle and Rice, Flowers, Ayuk as being the names that are about equivalent value.
And you would take Chris, let's say, you already answered for London, but you would also take Chris Olave heading into year 3, also in a situation with sort of below average quarterback play. over Roma Dunze as a sixth overall draft pick in the NFL draft, New York Giant?
I would. I do think that Adunze is a better prospect, but Olave has proven very conclusively at the NFL level that he's good. So you already have a hit there, and you already have a young player. You have a dome in an environment where I think that that division is going to shoot out over the next 4 or 5 years. You're going to have some really exciting games there. With Adunze, you need him to hit to basically be what Chris Olave already is. And so from that perspective, even if the ceiling is maybe a little bit lower for Olave, I think he's a very clear-cut choice.
So take tight end premium out of the equation. One interesting thing, I had Ryan McDowell on recently, and he said it's the most clear-cut he's ever seen for a top three in single QB values. And, you know, Brock Bowers is the 104 in that scenario. Is there a scenario where you're taking Roma Dunze ahead of Brock Bowers, where you'd have to adjust things? Or is it so much of a Brock Bowers is so far ahead of a Dunze for you that you're kind of dug your heels in on this?
Yeah, I think the big thing that changes there is that the tight end becomes less flex viable. And so then it depends on how important flexes are to your particular format and then where you are already at tight end. If you still actually just need to address the tight end position, I think Bowers is an easy choice ahead of him. If you already have an elite tight end and you're thinking like, I'm going to have to make the pick and then do a trade, or I'm going to have to put this guy into a flex spot, then maybe you would want a Dunze. But I mean, I'd be very tempted just to try and trade down if it's clear cut in that format. Take Bowers, do whatever you need, and then take some of these other guys I don't know that we necessarily have that big of a gap between Adunze and Xavier Worthy and Troy Franklin, a couple of guys who, depending on the individual league, could be substantially less expensive.
Right now, the top eight picks are fairly locked in Superflex without knowing the landing spots, the four quarterbacks, the three wide receivers, and Brock Bowers. Who is your current 109?
Well, the guy I kind of wanted to go with as the wide receiver who would, you know, finish in the top 10, would be a wide receiver one as a rookie, is Xavier Worthy. You look at what he did in his freshman year in college. You look at the 4.21, and you think about him potentially being drafted into a situation where his team is competent. Especially the best scenario there, I mean, Xavier Worthy to the Chiefs. Now, there are going to be people concerned about the fact that Kansas City has taken some time to deploy Sky Moore and Rashee Rice. And part of the answer to that probably is just that Sky Moore is a bust. So it doesn't really matter how long it took to deploy him. One of the reasons that he was not effective is he's not good. So it wasn't really, the timeline is sort of irrelevant there. Rashee Rice ends up over the second half of the season being one of the dynamic players in all of fantasy football. And if your argument is that Xavier Worthy is another like clear tier above him as a prospect and would do more for the Chiefs, then, you know, why wouldn't you be even more enthusiastic there? So that's a very, very specific type of case, but especially with the Rice stuff that's going on, anything with the Chiefs does become pretty interesting. But with Worthy, you have a guy who's run patterns and generated production at a variety of different depths. So you have the fantastic freshman season, then you have the second year where he's got the incredible number of air yards, almost none of which were converted, but a huge number of air yards. Then you have a little bit more mix going back down to the original profile when you have Mitchell come in there for 2023. The thing that's moved Xavier Worthy back down for me a little bit, one of the things you can look at and see is that the like almost all of his deep passes are off target. And so the fact that that didn't convert very well is not necessarily on him. But then you go and you look at the ones that were on target and his catch percentage was terrible on those too. Now he's got the injury that made it difficult to catch some of the passes. There's a variety of things in play. I think that Worthy though is a guy that despite being small and despite being fast, there is more than one thing that he can do. And there's more than a niche role at the NFL level. So the question then is, does the team that drafts him, do they believe in him as a rounded receiver who could come in and do like Tank Dell plus kinds of things, or do they see him as a guy where they're just going to want to use him situational for like in-game tactics to maneuver a defense and occasionally, you know, create a big play? But if you've got a team that drafts him, and you would hope that if he's picked in the first round, this team looks at it this way, who sees him as a potential stud, who sees him as Tyreek Hill, you know, they got a different body style. So gonna be, again, different things they can do. But somebody who has that high an expectation for him, I mean, he could easily go and be a player who is more valuable right away than Odunze.
I think you brought up an interesting Tank Dell-like comparison. I've said that a bull case for Xavier Worthy could be like a Jalen Waddle rookie season in terms of the target volume. You could just stick Xavier Worthy in the slot in an offense that's struggling to do some things, target him heavily, and I think he could do a lot of fun fantasy things for us. Tank Dell, certainly that gets you excited with the weekly ceiling. But Xavier Worthy, yeah, we're rooting for him to get in the first round, as I'm sure you are. And I think he will. I think he will. That over-under is right there at like 28. So knock on wood, we see a nice landing spot for Worthy. Running back-wise, J.K. Dobbins signs with the Los Angeles Chargers. To me, the hope that Harbaugh and that organization would take one of these running backs we like in the second or third round sort of goes down a little bit. The timing of the Dobbins signing, to me, it's sort of like if you missed on your running back targets during the draft and you signed Dobbins after the NFL draft, I get it. But signing him before the NFL draft, I think, was a little bit telling. So that landing spot to me is not as fun. Dallas is the one that everybody's pointing at and saying that's sort of the nuts landing spot for any rookie running back. And I would agree with that. You'd see that player steam up in best ball and redraft, certainly in our dynasty rookie drafts. Are there any other rookie running back landing spots that you look at and say that is a great landing spot and that's, or simply a very good landing spot that could elevate that player's potential for us in our dynasty teams?
Well, if you land with the Giants, then you have the potential to be the starter. But additionally, the ones that I keep coming back to are the ones that I think it would be fun. And if you land with the Bills or the Chiefs, with the Bills, there probably is just a lot of potential volume there, even with James Cook in place. With the Chiefs, Pacheco did take a nice step forward if you look at his peripherals and some of the things that he did last year for them. But the Chiefs are one of these teams where, because of the way that they're approached, you know, the yards before contact that are probably not the result either of the offensive line or the running back are just crazy. So the ability to exploit that, if you have a difference maker as opposed to just a guy, then for me, I mean, the Chiefs are the one where you could end up with a season that, I mean, you're talking about a Marshall Faulk or a Christian McCaffrey or that type of year, even with a more mundane type of player, because the situation is so fantastic. You know, what do the Chiefs think about Pacheco, and would they be willing to let a guy do that? That might be a little bit more complicated because the Chiefs appear to be higher on him than I think they should be. But the other thing there too is just you're talking about offenses that could score a ton of points and could get a huge number of points to the running back. And, you know, the health of the starter is never guaranteed, sadly. And so even from a contingency basis, the number of scenarios where a Bills or Chiefs back who's a rookie would go on to, you know, be a top 10 finisher or be the guy you had to have for the fantasy playoffs. There are just a lot of different opportunities there.
Yeah, I love that one. We talked a little bit in the pre-show about how it could be a rough Saturday morning for James Cook managers if they do select like a Trey Benson, you know, or player of that level. But yeah, the contingent upside for players in those offenses is certainly exceptional. And I would say in Kansas City, we've seen sort of the Jerick McKinnon role and how effective that role could be in the offense. There's a couple of guys who could land there. Sean, give us your favorite sleeper in this draft class.
I think it's probably going to be either Tyrone Tracy or Tez Walker, depending on, you know, exactly how you want to define it there. But one of the things for Tracy, you have this position switch and you're thinking, well, yeah, maybe the athleticism is there. Maybe the pass catching ability is there. One of the things that's always a little bit of a concern is if you failed as a receiver, maybe the pass catching ability is not there, right? And that's one of the things that I always like to mention with Antonio Gibson is, you know, maybe that's a bug, not a feature. But with Tracy, immediately looks very dynamic as a rusher. He's got a 30% evasion rate last season, which, you know, basically puts him at this elite level. More or less at the top of the class. It's going to be up there with a Marshawn Lloyd. And with Lloyd, you know, some of the questions you have are simply like, why does he not play more? With Tracy, the answer is like, because he was making this transition. He could be something different at the NFL level than he was at the collegiate level. Then he goes and tests, and you have results for the explosive numbers and the agility numbers that I believe are both like in that 90% range. And, you know, any question that I had for him where it's this matter of like, can I really say Antonio Gibson, you know, a poor man's Antonio Gibson, or could I say, you know, Antonio Gibson plus, as soon as you post those athletic numbers, which correspond with, you know, what you were able to do instantly, you know, at the collegiate level, I mean, he's a guy where I think there is a very real chance for him to go earlier in the draft than people are thinking. There's really not that much blocking him from being like the third running back off the board. If a specific NFL team actually really does like him, there aren't a lot of additional names there. And then, you know, what you could do in that kind of scenario. And I think that people look at Antonio Gibson and think, well, I mean, who really cares? He's somebody who has flopped. And yet when you look at instant impact, I mean, he was a very valuable player in his rookie season, and maybe he's had some bad luck since then. So I like this combination of traits and athleticism for Tracy in a class where, I mean, you're not really competing with a lot of other guys.
Yeah, and Curtis talked about Tez Walker a ton last time he was on Dynasty Life. Highly recommend going back and listening to that one. Team RotoViz is very into Tez Walker. You guys are definitely flag planning that one. Certainly has the speed and the big playability and should have good draft capital. Who is the one player, final question, who is the one player that when we look back at this draft class 3 years from now and take this in context of any particular round pick you want, who is that one player that everybody's going to kick themselves in the butt and say, damn, I wish I took this player in every single one of my rookie drafts. Look at what a good pro he is.
Well, I think Walker's a possibility. I just traded in to take him at the 401 in a league that I do with Scott, where it's a pre-draft rookie draft. So those are always a little bit of fun. I think it could be a Will Shipley, where the price there, I mean, he's priced as though he's a bust, which he had a very poor final season, and that's not the direction that you want to go. But when you're talking about a guy who came in with his, you know, prospect pedigree, like his, you know, recruiting ranking, you know, what he did early, how he tested his pro day, if you want to give much weight to that, the hybrid ability that he possesses. Again, if we're thinking about somebody who could be a lot better in the NFL than he was in college and maybe is a better fit at the NFL level where the team wants him in a committee as opposed to the disappointment that you generate when you're not quite a workhorse back in college. But I'm going to go with Bo Nix. And we kind of get back to this question of like, where is the value of the quarterbacks and where do you want to be in terms of trying to build out your QB room without spending a lot? I had an article that went up yesterday looking at what his stats are when you strip out all of the manufactured production. And the shocking thing is that they're fantastic, right? And so maybe you look at him, and we talked about the apples and oranges comparisons. We've got the young QBs, we've got the old QBs. But even if it's nothing else other than saying he is much closer to Daniels than he is to Penix, and you're probably going to get a team like the Vikings or the Broncos needing to go ahead and select him. And so one of the things that's kind of interesting, you look at these mock drafts, and a lot of people do have, mostly because it's fun, I'm guessing, but they'll have a team like the Giants or the Raiders moving in and blocking what Minnesota has, you know, very clearly shown to everybody that they're going to do, which is to try and get McCarthy. If they get blocked and they can't do that, then, I mean, Nix is the guy who makes their offense work. He's the guy who makes the Broncos offense work. And, I mean, you could he could end up being on the Giants behind Daniel Jones, which wouldn't be great. He could end up with the Raiders and be like in this weird three-person mix where all of those guys maybe look the same in training camp, and then the Raiders have no idea what they want to do. But there are so many positive scenarios for Nix to where he really should probably be like the 107. And I don't get the impression right now that that's where almost anybody is. If you're going to be able to get him, you know, in the second round, then it's again one of the reasons why in any type of super flex format, whether it's to, you know, draft the running backs in a year where the running backs aren't good, or it's to draft like the second tight end, or to draft the QB who's unfashionable at the time. He may be unfashionable now, but the guys who start and are one of those 32 players taking snaps in week one, they're going to have very significant trade value. So I think that Knicks is oversold in terms of what he actually is as a player. There are risks when you have an older guy, certainly an older player who is drafted into an unclear situation. That wouldn't be good. But I mean, that dude was amazing for Oregon this past season. And I think that you have a really good chance of seeing a lot of that at the NFL level.
14 rushing touchdowns two seasons ago. And he's old, but he's got 61 career starts. Sean, when's the last time you evaluated a guy with 61 career starts? Good stuff. This was really a lot of fun. You were very generous with your takes and your time. Of course, I keep you longer than I told you. It's my little secret at Dynasty Life. I always keep that extra 10 minutes. But let everybody know what you have coming out at RotoViz.
Yeah, so we're going to have the third volume of the guide, as I mentioned, and that will be awesome. I'm going to have, if I can manage to get everything perfectly polished up, I'm going to have the series over the next 6-7 days, right before the draft here, making the argument for the top six guys all as a very legitimate 101 in Dynasty rookie drafts. There will be, a wealth of advanced stats kind of working through the case. And one of the things is, Neighbors was dramatically better than Marvin Harrison this last year. I'll make that case. Certainly Harrison, with what he does and the variety that he has brought to the table over the past couple of seasons, but the specific thing that he does well, and that he's done it with two different quarterbacks and done it as a young player in two different seasons. I don't need to sell people on Marvin Harrison, but obviously that case is there. We'll look at the quarterbacks, and I get a lot of trade offers for the 105, the 106. If nothing else, don't trade out of those picks. You're maybe giving up something that is worth the 101 in most seasons. We'll have all of that and more. And very shortly, we'll have all of the rookie draft content. Talking with you today, Theo, definitely has fired me up for all of that. Those drafts get probably like the best week in fantasy football.
That Saturday, when you get the notification that your rookie draft has started, especially in the FFPC, nothing better than that. He's Sean Siegel. Make sure you're checking out his work over at RotoViz and all the good stuff they're putting out there. Stick with us here at Dynasty Life. After the NFL draft, I'll have Scott Connor as my guest, and we're going to try to attempt to re-rank these players and get you ready for your rookie drafts. We will see you soon.
Hey, I want to thank you for being part of this broadcast. If you have any thoughts on it, leave a comment. If you enjoyed it, make sure you leave a like. And if you want to see more shows on the Player Profiler channel, subscribe to it. That's how we know you want more.